Hello, Jordan.
The sale is live, Michael.
Oh, coming
the
right
sale
out.
To join the online fitness business mentorship is live. If you want to join, if you want to join the mentorship, if you want to build your online fitness coaching business, whether you're starting from scratch, you have nothing, you don't have a website, you don't post on social media, none of that. Or if you're all the way to, you're crushing it with your online fitness business and you want better systems, you want better online coaching methodologies, you want more accountability, or if you're anywhere in between that, if you join right now, you can get in for $500 off the normal price. You can apply. The link is in the show notes to apply. We'll give you all the information. Mike will give you all the information. Mike is the one who's handling that stuff. But that's it. If you want to join for $500 off, a reduced cost of $500 freaking, which by the way, this is an underpriced program as is. This is a massively underpriced program relative to other like guru performance programs. Like you're going to like, it's insane how low cost this is relatively. And the cost is always going up, right? Like every time we do a sale, the cost has gone up progressively. So if you're like, hey, listen, I think I want to do this, but I don't know. The next time we have a sale, it's going to cost even more. So if you want to get in, if you want us to help you build your online coaching business, don't miss out on, because this will be the lowest price that it ever is ever. Because every 6 months, year, whatever, it increases in price. So don't miss out on this. We would love to have you in the mentorship.
Absolutely. And just one other note on that subject is we don't do sales very often. I think the last one was in July of 2023. So 9 months ago, 10 months ago, 2 sales per year max. A lot of years, we only do 1 sale in a year. So if you're interested, now is the time to join. And we would love to have you. Fitnessbusinessmentorship.com. You can click apply right there on the homepage and fill out your application. I'll get back to you within 48 hours. We'll see if we're a good fit and go from there.
Keep in mind, and Mike might get mad at me for saying this, probably not, because we're just like always on the same page. But if you're looking to join this for like a month or 2 months, it's not a good fit. You need to really be willing to jump into something for bare minimum 6 months. Think about it in the same way that you get an online fitness coaching client. You don't want someone who only wants to do a month coaching with you or 2 months of coaching with you. Like, how much can you really get done with fitness coaching in a month or 2 months? Business is the same, and potentially even longer term. It's like,
definitely.
It's if you're not willing to put at least 6 months, and that's on, like, I'm debating if I should just say at least a year, but like you need to be willing to be in this for the long term if you really want to make this worth it.
Here's what we'll say. I agree that 6 months minimum, and that's on the low side. We'll just say that the people who do the best stay in the longest.
Correct.
And yeah. And we're talking multiple years.
Yeah.
But 6 to 12 months is a good mental minimum commitment and go from there.
Yeah. That's it. Join right now. Apply to join. Link is in the show notes. And that's it. What's up, Michael?
I just had an all-time workout. All-time workout.
No wonder you're in a good mood.
Yeah.
What'd you do?
I was just taking all kinds of high rep sets to failure for no reason at all other than the pump.
Did you have a good pre-workout?
Yeah, I had my normal pre-workout. Actually, I didn't. I mixed up the pre-workout meal with, instead of toast with banana, I had a couple of these little pancakes with banana and syrup.
Oh,
the
wow.
The protein shake. Yeah.
Nice.
Yep. Little,
I love that.
Overhand wide grip seated cable row, high rep to failure, elbows out wide, a little different
variation.
Single arm cable standing bicep, getting the arm behind you a little bit, getting that extra stretch in the bicep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Chest supported rear delt, but really hitting the rear delt, going overhand grip instead of parallel, getting your arms out in front of you a little bit, elbows straight, reducing the range a little and really isolating that rear delt instead of going with a heavier weight and kind of getting more upper back, taking that into the 20 to 30 rep range, just burning out the rear delts. Felt really good.
Dude, I'm staring at your front right now. I can see your rear delts. They're so freaking big that I can see them poking out from behind. That's insane.
You're the best. That's what friends are for right there. Through your hooded sweatshirt, I can see your rear delts from the front.
That's awesome.
No, but it got me thinking actually about something that maybe four people are interested in, maybe zero, but I'm very interested in this. My sensitivity to blood flow to the brain is unbelievably high. Mm. And when I think of like doing cardio, doing even going for a walk, doing zone two cardio, doing zone five cardio, playing hockey or fighting or sparring or doing something where doing sprints. When I think about an intense weightlifting session, when I think about consuming vasodilators versus vasoconstrictors. So we joke about how much I like beet juice and have had it in my pre-workout for going on years now. But the way that that makes me feel compared to less blood flow to the brain. So being sedentary, laying around, consuming vasoconstrictors, like when I had that nicotine pouch when I visited you in Texas. It almost ended my life. I feel very soft admitting it, but we were real hyped for about 20 minutes. And then I was like, Jordan, I need to lay down.
Yeah, you just laid down.
I laid down for a while. My sensitivity to blood flow to the brain is very high. And I don't know why that is. What about me makes me like that? But I would imagine some others may be able to relate and not even know that they can relate. So it's something worth paying attention to.
Just like noticing how you feel when you're doing activities that increase blood flow to the brain.
How I feel during and how I feel for the hours afterward. If I try to do a 3-hour computer session after playing an hour of intense hockey and I can focus very well and very easily for 3 hours and dominate work versus if I had just been sitting around on the couch for a couple of hours and then wanted to dive into an intense work session.
No way.
Night and day.
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. I feel you. I feel you.
Jordan, you have news for the audience.
Trying to think. I feel like there's a lot of news, but I'm trying to think of like what you're excited to talk about.
No, it's the most important thing right now. I'm gonna give you one word and you'll know.
Okay.
Pristine.
Oh yeah. I thought that's where you were going with it. I was like, is he talking about my colonoscopy? Is that what he's talking about? Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Dude, I got a colonoscopy. It was wild. I got a colonoscopy and an endoscopy. I had both at the same time.
Whole GI scoped out.
Oh yeah. Everything. And I'll want to go through the whole experience. Yeah. I mean, I'll give a little rundown of what it was like. So for the background, for many episodes prior, if you've been a avid listener, you've heard Mike say, can we talk about it? Can we talk about the GI, the beet juice? Can we talk about it?
We told the beet juice story.
Man, yes. My memory is unreal. So I went to a GI and my primary care physician was not really being helpful. She referred me to a GI doctor who took like 2 to 3 months to get into. And so finally get in there last Monday. So a week ago today. And we went through, he did a whole assessment and he was like, hey, I think it'd be worthwhile if you had a colonoscopy and an endoscopy. And I was like, okay, cool. And that was on Monday. And he's like, all right, let's do it on Wednesday. I was like, oh shit. Okay. So started the fasting on Tuesday, just basically full fast. My wife got me some Jell-O and stuff. I had a little bit of that, but I was just like, I'm just going to really try and go for the full fast. And fasted. Then at like 6 p.m. the night before on Tuesday night, they gave me this solution that I have to drink. And dude, just like, I'm not going to give the full details, but it just clears you out. It completely clears you out. And then I drank it again, 6 a.m. the morning of on Wednesday, continues to clear you out. I was going to go by myself, but they require someone else to drive you. So I was like, all right, I'll just Uber. Fortunately, my wife was like, absolutely not. Like, I'll take you, because you get there and you have to like have someone sign a sheet saying I'm driving you back.
Oh, good.
Which is crazy. Cause like, what if someone doesn't have someone? I'm sure they have situations for that. But anyway, like my wife was there. Awesome. Go in. And, the whole time I'm thinking, because you go under anesthesia, and I've never had anesthesia before. And in my mind, I was like, I'm not going to let the anesthesia knock me out. Like, I was just like, I'm not going to let it. And I kept saying it as a joke to my wife, but the more I said it, the more serious I got. So I told my wife, I was like, yeah, the doctors are going to be blown away. That like, I'm just like, no matter how much they give me, I'm just not going to go to sleep. They're going to be like, you know, like the old Jack Bauer jokes, like the pillow, like Jack Bauer sleeps with the pillow under his gun. Like that type okay. of stuff is like, mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, mm-hmm. the anesthesia is going to go to sleep because of me type of stuff. And like, I like got myself to believing it. And so, you know, you get in this fucking gown and you're not wearing anything. And because they're going to enter you from, it's just all this insane shit. And so I'm lying down, they wheel me into this room, and I'm expecting them to walk me through and say, okay, so we're going to do this. They just wheel me in, and the nurse just goes, all right, have a good nap. And I was like not expecting it. So in my mind, like as soon as she said that, I was like, I just start to say a prayer. I was like, all right, I'll be good. And then the next thing I know, I'm waking up. I'm just completely knocked out. Like there is no part of me that could resist whatsoever, just completely knocked out. And the first thing the doctor says to me, as soon as I wake up, he walks in and he goes, you've got a pristine colon. And I was like, okay, good. Good to know. Everything's good there. Yeah. So yeah, that's where the word pristine comes from.
That's great. It's great to have that reassurance. You know, if you were having some chronic digestive issues and weren't exactly sure what might have been the culprit and just wanted to have the peace of, you know, if someone's listening, 32, almost 33 year olds, a little on the early side for getting a colonoscopy, like what's the why behind it? Getting that peace of mind that all is well and that you're healthy is, yeah, absolutely.
I've heard too many horror stories to be like, to consider that too early. You know, it's like, why not? You might as well just get it checked, because better too early than too late.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And you got great news. And so
a pristine colon, feeling good about it. Yeah, dude, they showed me pictures of my colon. It was wild. It's like, that's insane.
Jordan called me on the drive home and was maybe a little loopy from the anesthesia.
Yeah, I was still
like,
loopy.
I got pictures of it. He's like, want me to send them? I'm like, I don't need the pictures.
I don't need to see your fucking colon, buddy.
I don't need your shit. I can't tell if that's an overwhelmingly personal thing to see or if it's just like an inanimate object, but my gut reaction was like, I believe you that it's pristine. I've never seen
I've thought about just sending them to you regardless, just like just sending you the picture. I don't know. It's just a colon. You know what I mean? And it's pristine.
It's not like a dirty colon. I'm very happy that that you got good news and that peace of mind and that, you're healthy.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. You're a healthy guy.
Baruch Hashem. You know, when are you going to get your first oscopy of the colon?
You know, things have been pretty good with digestion, et cetera. And so I don't have a burning desire right now. But if I ever did, I would definitely get it checked out. I had digestive issues 5-6 years ago where I went and saw a GI. And he did the thing where he had me, you know, take a dump in like some kind of, I don't remember container. What it was, a plastic container.
Yeah.
And then mailed it in and they tested it. And they were like, good, you're great, you know. It was probably just a time when I was under a lot of stress combined with not getting enough fiber and made a few changes in my lifestyle and nutrition, and within a matter of weeks was good to go. But same thought process as you, which was, I'm not just going to ignore these symptoms. I'm instead going to investigate a little bit and make sure all is well. And it was.
Dude, the GI told me, and I don't know, this is just one GI, but he was, because I did that test too where you just go to the bathroom in a container. He was like, yeah, you know, there's a lot of like...
You're so appropriate using the verbiage, go to the bathroom.
I don't know. I remember when I did the hoarder story. I was like, I'm trying to steer away from it now.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Yeah.
But he is, in his opinion, he was like, yeah, I know we did that test, but, you know, they're not like, they're definitely not 100% accurate. He was like, there's a lot of false positives and a lot of false negatives. He's like, you know, so... I was surprised to hear that.
Jordan's trying to scare me a little bit. I actually talked to a doctor who said some colonoscopies produce a lot of false negatives. And he's heard stories of pristine colons in a year later.
Gone. They're gone.
Yeah, gone. So
yeah.
Good luck with that test result, Jordan.
Thanks, man.
I'm just kidding. He actually said that, though?
He did say that.
I feel like you're just trying to instill worry in me.
Well, I do try and instill a little fear in you because you remember you're not really fearful of anything. So I do, like, whenever I can, I try and inject a little fear into your life.
I think I'm pretty dialed and good on my health and digestion these days and health in general. But, you know, could always be better. We'll see. I think the recommended age for a colonoscopy is 45.
I think it's 40 now, but either way.
Most people should get their first colonoscopy at the age of 45. Current guidelines suggest you should get your first colonoscopy at the age of 45 if you are at average risk of colorectal cancer. And then if there's no polyps, you wait 10 years. I believe if there are some, maybe five or fewer. Listen to your doctor. Don't listen to two guys.
You said Peter Attia does it like every year and a half, 2 years.
I remember listening to a podcast several years ago where he was talking about high frequency colonoscopies. It might have been annual. It was either every year or every 2 years because it was a very statistical and mathematical analysis of identifying risk, you know. And basically him paying out of pocket for it was worth it for the percentage chance that something developed rapidly, and him saying like a 5 or a 10 year window was too long to he wasn't comfortable with waiting that long.
He's got a lot of fear.
That's what you said. I don't know that to be true.
Obviously, I've never spoken to him, but like, I would like to have a colonoscopy every couple of years, and that comes from fear. And I would imagine that that's why he's doing it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm very happy you got that peace of mind.
Thanks, brother.
Okay. Next topic. Have you ever, just a real quick question, have you ever had homemade soup that is, I've never seen soup created like this, but I had it last night, where you take a bunch of vegetables, carrots, garlic, peppers, tomatoes. I don't even remember onion. I don't even remember everything that was in it. Definitely all of those things, maybe more. We're talking multiple full tray sheets of vegetables that you season and then roast in the oven.
Okay.
Get them real
soft. Sounds good so far.
And then you put it all in a blender. Ooh. And you add Coke. Like some form of fat. I believe it was coconut milk. Not a massive amount. 35 grams of fat worth of coconut milk. Blend it all together and it becomes a soup. And 8 to 10 servings of soup, I want to say. But the only ingredients are a whole bunch of vegetables, salt, pepper, maybe some garlic. I don't even know, actually. And then the combination of the liquids that are in the vegetables and the coconut milk you add creates a texture that's like really good soup.
I mean, that sounds amazing. I've never seen that. It sounds like something I would love to have with my dinner or lunch, you know? That sounds fantastic. Yeah. Oh, wait, did you have that?
Yeah, I had it last night.
Oh, did your wife make that?
Yeah, she's always tinkering with recipes and things of that nature. And I'm usually,
that sounds amazing.
I'm usually would avoid something like that because I assume in something that has a little bit of cream taste to it, that the fat to everything else ratio is so off the walls and that there aren't really that many micronutrients and that it just isn't worth it. But knowing you got 10 servings, 35 grams of fat, 3.5 grams of fat per serving, and seeing all of the whole vegetables that are just blended up into soup was a really easy way to get a lot of vegetables in as a side with dinner.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, it was good.
I'm just thinking about Ben Cure in the mentorship. I don't know if you don't know this because you don't really scroll. Ben Cure hates soup.
I forgot about that.
Do you know this? Have you seen his like anti-soup?
Yes.
Post?
Yes, I've seen a few of
them. He's like super anti. I didn't know that you knew that. Yeah, he hates soup and he just always goes off on soup. So as soon as you were talking about soup, I was like, oh man, Ben
is not going to like this.
Which, by the way, like that's like literally the purpose of really just like having something that you really stand by no matter what. Cause as soon as that thing is brought up, Like, I can't think of soup now without thinking about Ben Kier. Mm-hmm. That's just like, that's
good branding.
Yeah, that's super funny. Uh-huh. But dude, that soup sounds amazing to me. I love soup. I'm a big soup guy. So when I come over, I would like to have that one.
Done.
Did you see her cooking? You see like all these veggies. You're like, what the fuck? Like,
she showed me before.
Oh, she showed you. Yeah.
It's like, oh, it looks great. Let's give it a whirl. Isn't it wild that on our Instagram page, at Personal Trainer Podcast, by the way, if you're not following, Jordan crushes it, posting 3 times a week, Sunday, Monday, Tuesdays, just consistent as ever.
I'm really dialed with that.
Completely dialed. Isn't it wild, though, that our two best ever performing posts were me talking and then you talking basically about the same subject, which was that you need to be consistent if you want to lose body fat?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because I'm not surprised about it, but just because I see that's what people like, dude, every time I post about it, people are like, oh, I really needed to hear that. So I'm not surprised, but like, I also am surprised.
I envision your audience as needing to hear that, but I envision, respectfully, of course, and my audience too, probably, but I envision the combination of us, which is here, which is not all coaches. We get tons of people who write in and talk about the podcast who aren't coaches, who aren't personal trainers, who just enjoy, but there's definitely disproportionately more personal trainers who obviously know and understand that concept that are consuming on social media. It was surprising to me given the audience.
Yeah. I just think from my experience with social media, consistency is always something that people need to be reminded of, even though they obviously know it. It's one of those things that as soon as the message pops up, it's sort of like a fortune teller. You know, it's like full of horseshit. They'll just say something that really hits home with you and you're like, oh my God, they know all about me type of a thing. You talk about consistency and no matter who's listening, they can immediately relate it to their life and how it needs to be applied. And like, it feels like you're really talking to them. And even though it seems like they should know it, which they do know it, it is surprising how much it hits home. I think, and you and I were talking about this, I think the most surprising thing about this message is how every time people are confused by it. Like in the comment section, there are always people who are like, well, I don't know. Like, I don't feel like this makes a lot of sense. Or like, it's just like, there are people who are confused by the consistency message. And that to me is chronically worrisome and shocking to me.
You know, on 25,000 views, 3 comments of people being confused, I'm like, if you look at 25,000 people in life and then you pick out 3 who might be confused by a concept, I feel like that's about right.
Those are the 3 who are vocally confused by
true,
it.
True. Yeah. So maybe 1 in 100 actually comment. So there's 300 people confused out of 25K. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a theory that message resonated with coaches specifically because coaches understand that so such a high percentage of conversation with fat loss coaching clients is helping them become more consistent with their nutrition. And so maybe there was some mashing of the share button from coaches who could really empathize with that message.
Yeah, which makes sense. Even that though, like whenever I talk to coaches, and you've heard me say this, I'll be like, listen, do you tell your clients to eat fruits and vegetables and drink water every day? And they're always like, yeah. And I'm like, okay, then why aren't you posting on social media every day? Like, true. Social media is your fruits, vegetables, and drinking water. Like, you don't necessarily want to do it, but you've got to do it. And every time I say that, every time, like, you see this huge light bulb go off, their eyes widen, they're like, oh my God,
yeah,
that's such a good point. It's like, yeah, you got to fucking do things you don't want to do consistently. And that's it. And it's so funny because
they understand it around fitness, but not around.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. It's a great analogy.
Yeah. Consistency, man. It's important. Sort of like with our podcast, there was a period of time where we were not super consistent with it. We sort of like, we were, but like not like super consistent, not
we
every
weren't.
Week.
We would take weeks off. I think we took a month off at one point, maybe multiple months. I feel like just weren't as serious of human beings then, and we're becoming more serious people. We're bearing a greater load.
Dude, we're bearing a huge load.
We're not floating around aimlessly in Pleasure Island, but rather we are bearing a load and carrying it up a hill.
Taking that load and holding it.
Correct.
Yeah.
Are you trying to make this into some kind of joke over there, Jordan?
Yeah.
Yeah, I figured you were. That's real nice.
Yeah. Consistency, man. What else you got?
That's about it. I had a short little PSA of that I think you can relate to probably right now, given where you're at in life and what's going on with the baby on the way.
What's going on?
Well, just I think some people have an on and off mentality when it comes to strength training, meaning they might be training 5 days a week for 2 hour workouts and making amazing progress and very into it and hyper focused on their fitness for months at a time. But then they might go through multiple month stretches where something happens, life gets busy, stressful. They might go on a 2 week vacation and never get back on the bandwagon after, and then just don't work out for a number of months.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to give a little reminder that the amount of training volume necessary to maintain is super low. So if rather than not training at all for many months, if you can go, you know, I would say twice a week, but even once a week, one long full body workout, but probably what would be better is one upper body workout, one lower body workout.
Yep.
Where you're hitting a few sets per body part, a few hard sets per body part is plenty of volume to maintain strength and probably most of your muscle, if not all, if at maintenance. And that's just so much better than falling off completely, seeing a bunch of progress, and then having to restart after a number of months. But just getting in there 45 to 60 minutes, couple days a week, you're going to maintain your progress, and that's so much better than giving it all away.
Dude, I agree so vehemently with this. I think when people hear this, though, one of the confusions they have is when they hear you're going to maintain your strength and your muscle, in their mind, they hear, oh, so I'm not going to look any different, which I think is a very important, like if you're taking 6 months and you go from training five times a week to training two times a week, number one is before we even talk about the actual physical changes, I think you will think you look different mentally. Just like from you looking in the mirror, if you go from training four or five times a week to 1 to 2 times a week, even if you do maintain all of your strength, all of your muscle, and even if, let's say, your body fat stayed exactly the same, I think that you would look in the mirror and you would see something different simply because of the mental toll that comes with not being there. Like you have this like disillusioned...
People think they'll look worse?
Yes, 100%. I'm carrying more body fat. I look softer, which, by the way, I think...
Residual pump.
I think they will look a little bit softer. Residual pump in general. Yeah, but like... You can also maintain your strength and muscle and still look a little bit softer because you're not training as often. Like that's very normal. Mm-hmm. You're probably getting less you're getting less overall volume.
Absolutely.
Like it's going to take an effect on how you look, both actually physically and also I think more so psychologically, that emotional component to it. Whereas when you understand this, you're like, hey, maybe you're going to look slightly different, but that doesn't mean that you should stop training altogether. And never mind the actual physical benefits, the physiological, the advantages of continuing to train 1 to 2 times a week. Also, the momentum that you have just from maintaining it every now and then, just from continuing to go, keeping it in your calendar and your schedule. When you go from like going to just not going at all, the idea of completely starting back up again, oh man, that's like climbing up a mountain, starting from the base of Mount Everest, versus when you just continue to go, it's sort of like you're just slowly moving up, you're slowly climbing the mountain, you're still there, you're at base camp, you're going, and you're like slowly going up, you're up, like still, you're slowly climbing it. It's much easier just to pick up the pace than it is to start at base camp all over again.
Yeah, because when you restart at the bottom of the mountain, it's not just psychologically difficult to get restarted, it's physiologically difficult to get restarted. Yeah. Like that, in those intense DOMS that you get, that super intense soreness from when you first started lifting weights, that's going to happen again. 80 to 90% of the soreness that you felt when you restart after doing nothing for 4 to 6 months. But if you've been going twice a week for those 4 to 6 months, you're going to experience very little soreness, just normal amounts of soreness when you increase volume. And, you know, you talk about looking worse in the mirror psychologically, a little bit physically with just a little bit less volume, a little bit less carbon water retention in your muscles, mostly psychological. But to be honest, you're still going to look infinitely better than if you stop completely. Like the difference between training 5x a week and training twice a week, maintenance versus trying to make progress in the mirror, is almost nothing compared to if you just stop lifting altogether.
Yeah.
Not to mention the nutrition habits that often follow from not having any sort of regimented routine in the gym. There's almost no reason to be tracking or keeping calories in a reasonable range. Usually there's a bit of all or nothing when it comes to nutrition as it relates to training. If you continue to do something, even just maintenance volume, you're going to be more motivated to keep nutrition in a reasonable place, keep protein reasonably high, not have as many days where you go off the rails with 3, 4, 5,000 calorie days. There's a lot of benefits to continuing to 45 to 60 minutes twice a week.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crucial. Even now it's cool. Like I'm watching Susan. Susan's here right now and she just had a hip surgery, a hip replacement surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And dude, she never stopped training. Even
Let's
with this
go,
like
Susan.
Devastating hip injury and like hip pain. Trained and trained and trained and trained. And like, dude, she just now she was outside, like this is a couple weeks after her fucking surgery. She's deadlifting now, single leg deadlifting, squatting. And like, it's not as strong as she once was, but like there's zero pain and she's squatting and deadlifting through a full range of motion. And the doctors are blown away because it's like her rate of recovery is outrageously fast relative to anyone else, especially her age, but just in general going through this. It's because she trained before. And then as soon as she got out, like she immediately started doing stuff. Like she set time aside. All right, I'm going to start training. I'm going to start doing things. And even though it looked different, like she kept her schedule. She kept training as much as she could for that time. And now that she's getting back into more frequent, more regular, normal training, it's just, boom, it comes back so fast.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Great job, Susan. Seriously, that's inspiring for others in similar positions. And even those of us who aren't.
Yeah, there's just no reason to stop completely for an extended period of time. A week, 2 weeks, even a month, you have something going on in your life, someone, a loved one passes, or you're taking care of someone. That makes sense. But like extended time of not doing anything, I just don't see that making sense because there's so much you can do even at home. There's so much you can do like for brief periods of 5, 7, 10 minutes. Like I just don't see it making sense for in any scenario.
Even in those extreme situations, let's use a close loved one passing, taking a number of weeks off for certain individuals and their personalities might make sense. Well, it is worse, you know, and we can get to that. But what I was going to say is even for the people who need a couple of weeks off, in those extreme intense situations, taking 6 months off isn't the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Like you're going to be worse off as a result of taking 6 months off.
Yep.
It's the misinterpretation of the word empathy where we think empathy means, you know, just support someone in whatever they feel is the right thing to do. And they might feel like stopping completely is the right thing to do when really empathy is willing the good in that other person, helping them to live in a way that is going to serve them best, even if they don't know exactly what that is at the time.
Love that.
Want to fire up some questions?
Yeah, let's do it.
What are you checking yourself out in the camera there? You look like you're like...
Dude, you kidding me?
Is that what was going on there? Were you Myron?
Myron, no.
You're looking at the jawline. You were like straightening up your posture. No, dude.
I've been, my skin gets super dry. Remember, I've spoken about that before.
You have. So I can't tell. Your skin looks beautiful.
No. Well, I hope it looks beautiful right now.
Looks.
Well, my wife got me this. Yeah, dude. My wife got me this like exfoliating pad, which I hate saying that I've been using it.
Just for one second. When I was going on that monologue about someone who loses a loved one and how they should continue training. And then I see you start doing this and David, let's run the visuals. And you're starting and you're doing that. That's what you were doing. You were thinking about your exfoliation.
Yeah.
Oh man, I gotta work on being a more engaging speaker. I can't keep Jordan's attention.
No, clearly not. I just get super dry skin, and I was just checking to make sure it's all right, dude. You know.
Oh, amazing! Yay!
All right, let's see. Let me see if I can find anything.
This is a good pod. This has been a fun podcast.
All right, best front squat replacement, or who cares? Just back squat. That's from MemB1. What's the best front squat replacement? Or who cares? Should I just back squat?
What do you think, Jordan?
I mean, I guess I need more context, right? Because it's like, well, why do you want the front squat replacement? Is it just because you don't like it? Is it because it's uncomfortable? Because I get that. They are uncomfortable. It's not fun to have it on your neck and all that. Like, that's not fun. So if it's more just a comfort thing, then yeah, just back squat. Like, that's totally fine. You could also, if you want to do a heel elevated back squat, so you could get more quad, and that way, relatively similar to the front squat, very upright torso, you get more quad. So, like, I think that would be a heel elevated back squat would be a good replacement from a comfort perspective.
High bar,
still getting a lot of quad on there. Yeah, high bar back squat there, or just front squat. Or, I think that's probably the best. That's probably what I would recommend. What about you?
For people who struggle with front squat due to the limitations in flexibility and mobility, I like to see what's going on with their grip. So you'll see people, beginners or maybe people who just don't have a lot of experience front squatting, who want to have their entire hands on the bar. I mean, some people will literally have the bar in their palms and trying to front squat, or some will have all four fingers and thumb on the bar, which isn't necessary and which makes it hard to get your elbows up high enough. So dropping your pinky and ring finger off the bar and just keeping, you know, pointer and middle finger on the bar and not holding it, right? You're not using your upper body strength or your hands to keep the bar in place. It's should be sitting, you know, not comfortably, but it should be supported by your front delts, and just kind of guided by your fingers. So making that adjustment and grip, if that's still something that's not working for you, doing the quote unquote bodybuilder or cross arm grip. If you're on video, you can see what I'm doing here, where you have the bar resting on your delts, and then you just cross your arms like this. Is a reasonable alternative, or you can hit other similar movement patterns. A hack squat machine is a great one. Like Jordan mentioned, a high bar back squat with heels elevated is going to be quite similar to a front squat. A dumbbell front squat, depending on you know, who you are and how strong you are and how much upper body strength you have, because dumbbell front squat requires a little bit more upper body strength in terms of holding the dumbbells up here while you're doing them. I find that works less well as a primary movement where you might be in the 3 to 6 rep range, but works better if you're up in the 10 to 15 repetition range, the workout. Those are all reasonable alternatives for someone struggling with the front squat. And I guess a high level point is you don't have to do any individual movement, which is something I wish I would have known earlier in my own lifting career, which is if there are movements that despite weeks and months of effort still don't feel good at all for you, but there are other movements that feel great and groove great and you don't feel like you're at injury risk and you're able to load and feel the muscle in the right place and you're getting stronger over time, cool. Spend more time with those exercises rather than the handful of exercises that don't feel great for you.
Yeah. Agreed. I don't really program the front squat much in the inner circle. I used to program it for clients individually when like I knew that either they enjoyed it or they specifically requested it or they were advanced enough that if I programmed it, they would be okay with it. I don't put it in the big group setting, just because never mind the technique. It's just really uncomfortable. And it takes a lot of time to get comfortable with it. And even then it's still uncomfortable. Like, I've been doing it for years and I still fucking hate it. Like, it's still really not enjoyable. And I think anyone who's really into strength training has a little bit of a masochist in them. And so there's a little bit of, like, for me, that even though it sucks, I a little bit enjoy it type of a thing. But for the person who hates working out already, I'm not making them front squat, like, especially with a barbell. Like, I'd rather do dumbbell front squat, goblet squat, heel elevated back squat, something like that, hack squat, whatever it is, just that something is a little bit, it's more enjoyable for them, where you get essentially the exact same benefits without that discomfort. So it's also worth noting, I'll occasionally get someone asking in the inner circle, hey, can you program front squats? And when I do, I always say, if I do program it, all right, front squat or whatever, and I'll write like an alternative for them to do so that if they decide not to do it, they can try something else. But it's definitely from a group programming perspective, you really have to know your audience and who your clients are.
If the inner circle wasn't or didn't have a high percentage of, you know, more beginner or early intermediate trainees, but instead was, if your focus was primarily athletes or even high level athletes,
I would include it a lot more.
Makes sense.
I would include it way more. I would probably include it, if I have 12 programs a year, which I do, I would probably include it in at least 3 to 5 of those programs out of the year. So at least 3 to 5 months would be front, at least.
Cool.
It's such a great variation for a more advanced population of people who are okay with that discomfort.
Great.
It's also, I think, probably the best, if not probably one of the best, if not the best components of the front squat is this. And this is another reason why I don't program in the inner circle. The front squat, you will almost never be able to front squat as much as you will be able to back squat ever. And so when you're working with an advanced population and they can back squat a lot of weight, 500, 600 plus pounds. And these are just regular athletes, never mind like power lifters. But you have someone who can back squat 400, 500, 600 pounds. That's a lot of stress and a lot of risk by putting up and a lot of time spent on that one movement. Whereas you all of a sudden you go front squat and they can do 50%, 60%, 70% of that back squat with the front squat. Well, now they're still getting that maximal strength stimulus with less weight. So there's generally less injury risk. There's less time on that individual movement. And so when you're working with that advanced population, sometimes it benefits them to use a movement that will require less weight in order to reach that maximal strength stimulus. Whereas in a less advanced population, it's not worth the discomfort for that. And like, they would benefit from holding on to more weight. So that I think is probably the major, major, major difference between an advanced and a beginner / intermediate for who it's worthwhile for and who it's not worthwhile for.
Great points.
Z. Abdul Rasul asked, what is the best martial art to enroll my son in?
That's a Jordan question right there.
But I want your opinion too. What do you think?
How old do we think his son is?
We'll say between like 8 and 12.
For an 8 to 12 year old, I would say that Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is the best martial art to enroll your kid in. I think it's the most practical around self-defense in like in-school fight situations that could come up. It's lower risk of injury than most striking. And I think there's just a mental fortitude that comes with, you know, the humility of tapping and losing in physical confrontation, the ability to just get completely smothered by someone who's better than you and not freak out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jiu-jitsu for those reasons.
You know, it's funny. I was thinking about this, and obviously I agree with grappling something like wrestling or jiu-jitsu over a striking like boxing, and definitely over something like taekwondo or something. But I was thinking even more relevant to the individual, and I was thinking if your son or daughter, by the way, this is for any child, if your son or daughter is like very already aggressive, like they're a very aggressive kid, and like they're just going nuts, and like maybe they're potentially being the bully, I would put them in jiu-jitsu for sure, teaching them like calmness and stillness. If your child is very is already very calm and almost like too calm and like very apprehensive of any confrontation and potentially getting bullied, I might even go with wrestling, just because wrestling teaches you a level of aggressiveness that you don't get as much in jiu-jitsu, especially at a younger age. And eventually, like, they sort of come in the middle and they meet. And long term, I think jiu-jitsu makes more sense for everybody from a self-defense perspective. But especially as a kid in school, there's something to be said for other kids knowing that, like, you can be aggressive if you need to. And jiu-jitsu mm-hmm. has this gentle component to it that especially what I see with the young kids when they're doing the young kids classes, it's gentle, and which is wonderful from a kid's perspective. Wrestling isn't gentle at all. And you see these young kids who are gentle and who are apprehensive after a couple weeks, couple months, all of a sudden, like they're diving head first at kids. And like, you see this aggression come out that I really think is worthwhile to have like in school, in a situation where someone might be targeted because of their apprehensiveness. So just something to consider.
That's great. I appreciate your perspective there. One thing that came to mind for me, you might actually really disagree with this one.
Okay.
For either wrestling or jiu-jitsu, but for some reason I mentally associate it more with wrestling.
Okay.
Is if I were to have a child who was interested in competing in either of those at a slightly higher level, I would not want him or her, you know, probably up until the age of 18, like at any point in time there, having to cut weight
completely
for competitions.
Agree. Completely agree.
I think the like hyper fixation on scale and the advantage gained under most current rules from being able to do a big time water cut and get into a division where you have a bigger advantage, I think that can do some damage long term and take some time to undo some of those behaviors and kind of mess up your relationship around the scale and food to an extent.
I couldn't agree more. I think that is with that, like, because I do want my kids doing wrestling and jiu-jitsu. But even then, like, even without a wrestling jiu-jitsu, whether it's like gymnastics or other sports that are very weight focused, not going to have mm-hmm. my daughters losing weight for absolutely not. Like, if they're a healthy mm-hmm. weight already, like, I'm not going to have them cutting weight. At 100% agree. I have wrestlers and I have people to reach out to me now who are in their 30s and 40s and 50s who wrestled in high school, who are still binge eaters because of the wrestling they did in high school. So I could not possibly agree with that more.
Yeah. Especially at an age where it's like, okay, you're going to be one weight class up. Like,
yeah,
that really sucks, especially if the people you're going against are cutting weight and it's going to be harder for you. But, you know, the downside of that compared to the downside of spending years continually cutting weight.
Yeah.
I'll take the downside of having tougher opponents.
Completely agree. Yeah.
Great episode. I know you got a live stream here in 5 minutes. Mentorship sale is live. You heard that at the beginning of this episode. Link is in the show notes. Fitnessbusinessmentorship.com. Apply. It's our first sale since 9 months ago. We don't do them very often. So if you're interested in joining and growing your online fitness business, whether you are just getting started or you're advanced and you want to build those systems out even further, apply.
$500 off. And remember, every time we do a sale, the price goes up from the last time we did a sale. So this will be the lowest that you can join the mentorship. So if you want to join, make sure you apply. Link in the show notes. We'd love to have you. Huge thank you to everyone who's already in the mentorship. We love you. We appreciate you. Have a wonderful week. We'll talk to you soon.
See you soon.